All right, it's time for us to get started. Let's all turn our attention in this direction. We've got a lot of ground to cover tonight, or this morning, I guess. It's not tonight yet. And there are a lot of great things left in the book of Genesis to cover. We've got about four classes after this one. So we got some distance to go, and I wanted to cover a lot of ground today, but it looks like a lot of people are out of town, or numbers seem to be down at least right now. And so they're going to miss out on some interesting stuff, but it's not stuff, just some real thing. And we may come back and try to fill in some blanks and everything, because I'm learning so much teaching this. I don't know if you're learning anything, but I want to thank you for listening the way you've listened and challenging me and the comments that you've made about the class. They all mean so much. They all mean so much. Let's immediately get to into the study. We're in the book of Genesis, and we've talked about, and it's been since we didn't meet last week. Want to go back and hit what we hit before, and that is Jacob and Esau's early life. You know about those two individuals. The last class we looked at the life of Jacob and Esau, and the meaning of their names. He was called Jacob. What does Jacob mean? It's a supplanter, if you want to sign the educated word. If you want to know what it means, he's a trickster. That's what he is. He's a deceiver, and so he's deceptive in what he does, and he's a conniving individual that figures out how to do things. And that came about because in the birth process of these twins, as his brother Esau was being born, who was the first one to come out, he's got a hold of his foot. He's trying to trip him up, and so they named him Trickster. And that's my word to describe him. And then Esau got the name Esau. Why? Because he was hairy. Because, so they gave him that name. Now, these boys grew up and they got other names. Jacob's name was changed to what? Israel. His name is changed from Trickster to Israel. And we'll talk even more about this a little bit later. Bill, let's go ahead and put that next slide up there. And that it means the Prince of God. His name was changed to the Prince of God. And so Esau received another name because he sold his right of birth for a bowl of red beans. And so they named him Red. And so, and that's what the word Esau means. Now, Esau, get this, important. Esau becomes the father of the Edomites all the way through the rest of the Old Testament. You're going to keep reading about the Edomites. And in fact, the book of Obadiah, it's just one chapter, but it totally concerns the Edomites and the fact that God was about to destroy them. If you think of Edomites, think of Indiana Jones, and you'll get it. You remember when he went into Petra, that rock city that was there, that where it was carved back into the wall? The Edomites, they're the ones who did all of that. They're mentioned in the Bible, and that the evidence of their existence is right there, and it became the basis. I think it was the first Indiana Jones movie. And so names have importance. And so then Trickster brings about a deception using his mother, and his mother's name was Rebekah. And that is when Isaac is blind, and they trick Isaac into giving the blessing. A difference between the birthright and blessing. And I wish I had known this. I don't know if the Sunday school teachers at West Huntsville congregation, if they really understood the difference between the two. You know what birthright means? Use the word to define the words. Your English teacher was wrong. You can use the word to define the words. The birthright is the right of birth. It's the rights that you have because you're the birth. In this case, it's because you're the firstborn, and it has to do with the inheritance. The blessing was that which the ancient fathers, the patriarchs, would pronounce a blessing on their children, and evidently God was a major part of it, because what was said in the blessing became a part of the destiny of the child. And so, it is whenever blind Isaac is deceived by Jacob. You remember how Rebekah made that, Esau was out trying to find some wild game to make some food for blind Isaac. And Rebekah could have done that all along. I think I verbalized this, but it just upsets me no end. Here's this blind man, and he really likes this, I think of venison, some wild game that is there, and that's what he really likes to eat. And she could have done that all along, and she could do it well enough so that that he couldn't tell the difference. And I just find that amazing. I wish she'd given him venison more often than what she did, you know. What's your husband's favorite food? If you want to get your husband to be happy, give him food. Okay, that's one of the things that is involved in that. And so as a result of this tricking of Isaac, Rebekah asks and urges her son Jacob to leave and get away from Esau. It is interesting, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes in this lesson today. But Rebekah's final words were, if Jacob goes out and marries one of these Canaanite women. Now Esau, at age 40, had married Canaanite women. And whenever he saw that his mom and dad wanted him not to be married to a Canaanite woman, he went out and married a descendant of Ishmael. You know who that is? Ishmael is Abraham's other son. I mean, you talk about Isaac and Ishmael. So he marries a cousin, thinking, well, that'll fix it all. That'll make it all work out really good. Didn't work out at all. And so finally, the statement is made that Rebekah says, go to where my brother is and find a wife while you're there. In fact, chapter 28, verse 1, Isaac was a part of that. I want to share something with you that I think I had never seen. I knew it, but I didn't know it. Does that make sense? And that is, let's go ahead and look at this timeline of Jacob's life. And look at it. Obviously, the time life begins. I didn't put a zero over there, but I bet you know where that zero should have gone if I had put it on there. And I'm not sure if you can see and read that. Is the font? Can you read it at all? Can you see how old he was when Esau married? And that Esau was he was 40 years of age. How old does that make Jacob? Just a few minutes younger than 40 years. It's like the fellow was at one of these caves, you know, where they have the stalactites hanging down from the ceiling. And he was on a tour there. And somebody says, now, how old are those stalactites? He said, they're 15 million and 4 years old. And they said, how on earth could you know that? He said, well, when I came here, they told me they were 15 million years old, and I've been here 4 years. He's at 40. The guys are 40. Now then, what I did not know, and we'll do the math. I want to show this to you. What I did not know was that Esau wants to kill Jacob when Isaac dies. Isaac is still alive. And in all of your Sunday school books, they're two little boys almost, whenever you see them. How old are they when it happens? I want you to look on the graph, and that is, Jacob is 77 years of age. I want you to hear that. When Jacob and Rebekah fool Isaac, Jacob is 77 years of age. Now, how do you figure that out? Well, go over to the right edge of that, and you see how old Jacob is when he dies. We know how old he was. Now he says to Pharaoh when he gets down to the land of Egypt, "I was 130 years of age." We'll talk about this later, but when Joseph brings Jacob down into Egypt, Jacob is 130 years old. How old is Joseph at that time? You remember how old Joseph was when he appeared? He was 17 when he went down into the land of Egypt. But when he appears before the king and interprets the king's dream, he's 30 years of age. Okay, what happens? Interprets the dream. There's 7 years of plenty. Remember that? And then there's 2 years of famine. It's 1 year for sure, and I don't know how far into that second year it would be before he went down to Egypt to buy food. So he's either 38 or 39 years of age. How old does that make Jacob at that time? Well, you subtract those 39 years from the life of from the life of Jacob, from the death of Jacob, and 39 from 147 is it? Somebody tell me what the number is. I've worked this out, and I'm having trouble following it. Okay, let me turn around here. Okay, he's 39 years of age. That allows you to figure out when Joseph was born. You see that? He's 91 years of age when Joseph is born. You can find this in the text. Now, you have to work back what you have to do, but you subtract 39 from 147. You cannot get 91. I've got I'm missing a number here somewhere. Oh, 30. You subtract 39. Subtract 39 from 130, because we're talking about Joseph's age when he goes down to the land of Egypt. So you subtract 39 from 130, you get 91. You see Jacob's age when Joseph is born? He's 91 years of age. How long does he work over in Egypt? How long does Joseph work for Laban altogether? 20 years, you remember? 7 years for the first wife, 7 years for the second wife, and 6 years after that. But he's born before the 6 years, so you subtract 14 from 91, and look how old Jacob is. He's 77 years of age. Does that blow your mind? You know, I mean, I don't know if I thought he's 35 or 40. You understand what I mean? Because it says Esau was 40 and he took the wife and everything. But that's not, you work the numbers backwards. And so Jacob is 91 years of age when Joseph is born. That's an amazing transition. Now then, he's 91 years of age. He is 91 years of age when Joseph is born. I've got that right, and so that's how old he was. He was 70. Well, he was 91, and you subtract 20 years from that, and he's 71 years of age. Isn't that amazing? Actually, 77, because you've got to add in the 6 years that's involved in that. That's amazing, isn't it? I just couldn't believe it. You know those little pictures we get our kids to color up and down the hallway here and all the rest and everything? How blind would Isaac have been? You know, Isaac is blind whenever he pronounces the blessing. But if he's only 40, he's still a young man. Isaac's still a young man whenever they deceive Isaac. It didn't happen when he was 40. If you're reading the text, all of a sudden it says, and Esau was 40. And so then the very next story is Isaac being an old man. Well, what happens? Well, what happens, you know, what happens is 30 or 40 years jumps right in there. That's not even in the text. and you get the text by working the years backwards. So here's what I did. How old was Jacob when he went down into the land of Egypt? He was 130. How old was Joseph? Joseph was 39. You subtract 39 from 130, you get 91. How long was Joseph over with Laban? 20 years. 71 years of age whenever he goes down, you only subtract 14 years because the 6 years have not come about. Subtract 14 years and to get to from the time of him being 91, and he's 77 years of age when that happens. That just blows my mind. I don't know if it impacts you like it does me, but all my life I thought, you know, he's just a youngster. He's a young adult, you know, like our young adults in the church. I don't mean if you're a young adult, you're 40 years of age, but if you're living to 130, you know, you're 40. I mean, he's still just a young whippersnapper. I'm telling you, he's not a whippersnapper. He's not really just a young guy. He's 71 years of age when all of that happens. That's enough time on that, but I wanted to throw that in there because trying to cover everything that's in the book, and that fascinated me so much. I don't know, I probably spent 4 or 5 hours trying to sort all of this out and getting it clear in my mind, and it's obvious it didn't get that clear in my mind. Now that 70 years, he leaves and heads away because his brother's about to kill him. And that's where he goes, and he goes over to where Laban is. He meets, when he first gets over there, Rachel. What's he done? He's gone over there to find a wife. Guess what? First woman he sees. You know about love at first sight's in the Bible. I mean, all of a sudden he meets his cousin. And I understand genetically we don't marry cousins and things of that nature, but that was not a part of their culture because Isaac married his cousin, you know, you understand. And Abraham married his half-sister or something like that. You understand. And so there was intermarriage there. So he's gone back and the first person sees is Rachel. And he befriends her, and he finds out who she is, and she goes home and tells her daddy Laban, hey, you know, your sister's son is here. So he invites Jacob to come back and live, stay with him. You've come all the way away from the promised land. You've come all the way back, not exactly to Ur of the Chaldees, but over into that part of the world. Mesopotamia is the name, general area that's there. And now you stay with me. And so he begins to stay with him. But before, on the trip over there, let's go ahead and get that Isaac's charge to Jacob about marriage. That's in chapter 28 and verse 1. Jacob dreams of the ladder that extended from earth to heaven. Now, we covered this before. I'm going to cover it again rather rapidly. What happened? He has left home. He's headed over. He doesn't even know what awaits him over there. And he lays his head down at a place that first was named Luz, L-U-Z. He renames the place Bethel. Bethel, Beth meaning house, El meaning God, house of God. Why did he do that? Because as he lay there that night, he had a dream. And there was a ladder that extended from where he was all the way up to heaven. And the angels were on that ladder. But up at the top of the ladder is God himself. And so that's what this ladder is all about. I think it is really, it's really interesting. The next time you sing Nearer My God to Thee, My Pillar a stone. What's that all about? He talks about let the way appear steps into heaven. That whole song, Nearer My God to Thee, and it was only 4 or 5 years ago when I started saying, I'm going to start looking at words in the song. I mean, really thinking about them. All of a sudden, wow, this is as though Jacob said this, Nearer My God to Thee. So he sees this ladder, go, what on earth is that all about? is it about that string art? Did you ever do that string art? Did you? Some of you are old enough, you remember string art where you'd put it on your fingers and you'd make Jacob's ladder. Could you still do it? I think I could still do that type of thing because I did it so much. You know, it took me forever to learn it, and I spent so much time learning. I think I've still got it. Anyway, it was string art that you could do and make the ladder that goes up into heaven. No one does that anymore, and only weird people did it when I was a kid, and I was really, really good at it. What's it all about? In John chapter 1, here it is. Whenever Nathanael comes to Jesus, Jesus says, "You think it's amazing that I knew that you, the kind of tree you were sitting under? Let me tell you, hereafter you will see a ladder going from earth to heaven. Then you'll begin to understand it. I am that ladder that extends from Bethel up to heaven." When you get to the book of John, it is so fascinating. He says to Nathanael, "You're going to see a ladder extending up, and you'll understand it then." What is the ladder from earth to heaven? No man comes unto the Father except by me. He is that ladder. Where does that ladder start? Bethel. What does Bethel mean? House of God. What is the church? The church is the house of the living God. There is an unbelievable area to sit and meditate and see how in this story that's in the Bible, why on earth is that story in the Bible? You don't know until you get to the New Testament and it is discussed there. Now then, having seen the ladder, God repeats the threefold promise that he made to Abraham. And he repeats it to Jacob. And Jacob makes a vow to God. God, I'm running away from home, but if you will bring back me to this land. Well, what's this land all about? It's part of that threefold promise. I'll make of you a great what? Great nation. Great nation in great land. And someday I'll send a great Savior. And God repeats that very promise. He'd made that promise to Abraham. He makes that promise to Isaac. And now he makes this promise to Jacob. At the time, and you become a teenage boy, like I once imagined Jacob was, running away from his brother who's trying to kill him. You know how comforting this is? You make this promise to a middle-aged man, 77 years of age. His life is over. Lost his job, lost his home, and now he's headed. He doesn't even know what's going on. What's going to happen when he gets to him there? And the Lord says, "Hey, by the way, I'm going to give you this land." And so he names this place Bethel, and he builds a pillar of stones there. He'll come back to this pillar of stones. You know, 20 years later, he's coming back to this very same place, the very same monument that he made. When he made the promise to God that you bring me back and I'll give you 10% of everything that you give to me. So Jacob arrives and he has that first encounter with Rachel and Laban, her father. And then there is that deception. And let's look at how the deceiver himself is now deceived. The deceiver is deceived. How'd that happen? He's in love. Who's in love with? Rachel. And so he makes an agreement with Laban that if you will give me your daughter to be my wife, I'll work for you 7 years. And the Bible says, and isn't it funny what love can do for you? It just seemed like it was just a short period of time. So he works 7 years to get his wife. Guess what happens? The deceiver is deceived. Love my mother. She used to say, "You reap what you sow," and a lot of times you reap it in this life, okay? He's 77 years of age. He's got the birthright and he's got the blessing. And now all of a sudden, somebody starts tricking him. And so instead of getting Rachel for a wife, who does he get? Her older sister. Rachel's older sister's name is what? What's the difference between Leah and Rachel? You know the meaning of the names? I forgot the name. Rachel means something like a princess or something like that. But Leah means a cow. That's one of the definitions of that Hebrew word. And so he was expecting to get a treasure, and he winds up with a cow. Now, you got to understand, cows were a very vital part. And to have cattle in that land was really, really special. Now, her name also has, but the one says Leah was fair-eyed. She was beautiful to look at. And so he's deceived. How does that deception happen? Well, there's a wedding feast. And whenever the time comes for the consummation of the marriage, it is at night. He goes into the tent expecting Rachel to be there. And lo and behold, guess when he discovers that it's not Rachel, that it's Leah. Daylight. You ever have a surprise thrown at you? Can you imagine? Can you imagine what he felt like? I've just had sex. I'm now married to this woman. And so he goes to Laban and says, "You have deceived me." So Laban says, "Fulfill, listen to this, her week, and I will give you Rachel, for which you will work another 7 years." And so it is not that he worked 7 years and got Leah, and then he worked another 7 years and got Rachel. He had no wife. And within 8 day period of time, he had two wives. And so, but the second one, he got on credit. Isn't it true that sometimes when you get married, you go in debt? Has that not happened to a whole lot of individuals? And that's exactly what happened to him. He owes for her, and so he works for 7 years to buy his wives. Now then. During this period of time, the 14-year period of time, the 7 plus the 7, there are 11 of Jacob's children that are born. And so when you get to the next chapter, Genesis chapter 30, what happens? Well, he's got two wives. The Lord closes the womb of Rachel, the beautiful one. She cannot bear children. And guess what happens? Just like that, there's Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah born. Now, this is a 14-year period of time. You got to have 11 children in 14 years period of time. It's not every year, but it's almost every year. And now all of a sudden he's got two wives and he's got four children. And it is significant. We don't have time to look at it. Why they named these children. You look at Genesis chapter 30 and you'll get insight into where Leah was. Now my husband will love me. Now my husband will love me. God has been my judge, you know, and a troop is coming. I'm going to be loved. Well, here's Rachel. She doesn't have any children. What does she do? She says to Jacob, "I want to have children. I want to have surrogate children." Is that something we can understand? "I want to give you children by my handmaiden." And so Rachel gives her handmaiden, Bilhah, and Bilhah has two sons. One is named Dan, the other is Naphtali. And then when Leah sees what Rachel, is this like sisters? You know? When Leah sees the handmaiden and Jacob having children by the handmaiden, now her womb evidently is closed now, or she's having no children. And so she said, "Well, I'll do what my sister did." So she takes her handmaiden, her name is Zilpah, gives him to Jacob, and Jacob has two sons, Gad and Asher. And then Leah has two more sons and a daughter. Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. And so you've got, that's 10 of them. And now we get to Jacob and Benjamin. Or pardon me, I should have has two sons. Rachel has Jacob. No, Rachel doesn't have Jacob. Rachel has Joseph and Benjamin. Change that word Jacob to Joseph. Has Joseph and Benjamin. Now, Joseph is born during this 14-year period of time. Benjamin is not born until he spent 20 years over there, and they come back to the promised land, and that's where Benjamin is born. Rachel dies in childbirth. So now then, Jacob's been over there 14 years. What's he got? He's got two wives, 11 children, and a daughter. He has 12, has 11 sons and a daughter. And the whole chapter is devoted to that. And it is so fascinating. And if we had more time, we'd look how they named their children. They're playing games back and forth with each other and the names they give their children. You know, I'm ahead of you. Now my husband will love me. And all of those things are involved in that. We don't have time to do that. It's very simple to do. Just go in there. If you've got a marginal reading in your Bible, and you'll see the names of those children and the games they're playing back and forth. Now then, after Jacob's birth, go to the next slide, Jacob and Laban's separation. After Joseph is born, Jacob and Laban come together, and Laban says, I have learned by experience that God blesses you. That's interesting. I have learned by experience. Here's an individual that is not evidently a believer in God, or only believer in God. Here he is, and he said, I have been watching, and everything you do is just turning out great. I want you to stay here and work for me. And so Jacob works 6 more years. And there's an interesting story about how they separated the goats and the sheep and the cattle that were born. And the end result of that is that he worked 6 full years and he became more wealthy than Laban did. There's a part of this story I do not understand. But when they agreed that I'll work for you, he said, okay, here's Laban's flock. I've worked 14 years. You know what a blessing I've been to. I want us to go through the flock, and I want us to get all the white sheep and separate them from the dark sheep. One translation says brown sheep. The other says black sheep. So here are the sheep. From this day forward, we're going to go through the herds, go through the flocks, and we're going to separate. We're going to separate brown sheep, black sheep, from the white sheep. Now they've got all of these goats. And there are goats that, are solid color, and there are those that are striped. And so they go through and they separate Laban's flocks, and Jacob has the brown sheep and the striped goats. Not very many. Do the same thing with cattle. Here's the part I don't understand. The Bible says that Jacob, looking as wise as he was, understood that strong sheep, strong cows, strong goats, when they're healthy, they have healthy children, healthy offspring. So he takes the branches off of trees. Poplar trees was one of the trees that you would recognize, and he strips the bark because they're striped goats that are going to be born. They are striped cattle. not solid color cattle, but striped cattle that's going to be born, and every one of them. And he lays this in the watering trough. Is this fascinating? And when the sheep and goats and cows come to drink and they see that striped tree inside the watering trough, guess what happens? Their offspring are striped. Now, if it's one of those times when the cattle are not fertile, healthy, the strong animals are not there, he does away with the striped things, and when those are conceived, they're the solid colored white sheep, and they're the solid colored goats and cattle. Lo and behold, God begins to bless. And at the end of 6 years, so many striped goats and brown and black sheep and cattle that are striped have been born that now Joseph is more wealthy than Laban in a 6 year period of time. All of the wealth, not all of it, but much of the wealth has been transferred from the ownership of Laban over to the ownership of Jacob. Now, Jacob moved his flock away, and he's 3 days away from where Laban was. And so he departs overnight. The Bible talks about Joseph being born, and when Joseph was born, he says to Rachel and Leah, let's leave. Let's go back home. And so Joseph is really young. Let's see. Joseph is 6 years of age. He said, when Joseph is born, that's when the 6 years works. And then after 6 years, he says, let's go back home. Been over there 20 years. And he leaves at night. And Laban is upset because he's lost all of his grandchildren. And he finally chases Joseph down, or chases Jacob down, and they make a peace. They arrive at peace because God had spoken to Laban and said, don't you harm this man that you're going out there. You're angry with him. Do not harm him. I think it is interesting that in that story, there are some idols that Rachel has stolen from her father, Laban. And she sits on top of them. She puts them in her tent and sits on top of them. And when Laban comes in looking for the idols, he cannot find them. Why? Because she's sitting in, she's got them under some cover there and everything. And she's sitting on the cover and she says, I don't feel like I can get up and move. And so he never finds the idols. Guess what Rachel is? She's a deceiver also. So we got trickster married to mistrickster. You know, and she tricks her own dad. Now then, Jacob and Esau are headed to the place to be reconciled. We'll stop right in the middle of this story. This is in Genesis 33 and 34. They arrive back in the promised land. And Jacob immediately begins to send gifts to Esau. Why? Because Esau says, when my daddy dies, I'm going to kill my brother. It's been 20 years. How angry is my brother? By the way, dad is still alive. There's no evidence that Rebekah was still alive, but Isaac is still alive when he gets back over there. And so Jacob sends gifts to him. He sends one wave of gift and then another wave of gift and then another wave of gift because Isaac is approaching him with 400 men with him. And Jacob is concerned. Well, the night before they meet, Jacob in the darkness. He sent the family on ahead. He's back on the other side of a river. And he meets a stranger and they wrestle all night. They wrestle all night. When daylight comes, the man says, "Release me." And Jacob says, "I will not unless you bless me." And this individual, the man he's wrestling with, says, "Your name is now Jacob. That's your blessing." Pardon, "Your name is now Israel. That's your blessing. You are one who has power with God." And guess what he's wrestling? Not a man, but an angel. We talk about him wrestling with God, but Hosea chapter 12 and verse 4 said he wrestled with the angels, with an angel. And so his name was changed from trickster, from supplanter, was to one who has power with God. There is a peaceful reconciliation with Esau, and that's where we'll start next week. Thank you very much.